Hi and welcome to another podcast from The Human Diver, where we are looking to apply counter-errorism techniques in diving. By that we mean human factors and non-technical skills. Our goal is to give you the knowledge and skills so that your dives are safer and more enjoyable. The podcast consists of audio blogs which have been published on our website. Show notes will be provided so you can dig deeper if you want. Ready to jump in? It is important for all divers to be aware of the conscious and unconscious decisions that they take in planning and executing dives. If risky behaviour does not have any obvious adverse consequences, it is very easy for the unsafe act to become the new normal. This is especially true within high-performing teams, in cave and technical diving, where it is easy to drift, especially if the team is small and not subject to many outside influences. I had an interesting discussion with a cave rebreather student earlier this year that reminded me how easy it can be to normalize breaking the rules and why it is important to be cognizant of decisions that can lead to drift. We were planning a complex hub and spoke dive in Cenote Jailhouse. Most agency standards for rebreather cave do not require especially long or complex dives, and many rebreather cave classes involve pretty simple dives that could easily be completed on open circuit. I believe that when learning to use a rebreather in the overhead environment, you should use the full capability of the equipment, and we were planning a 4-hour dive with lots of navigation. We decided that it would be cool to have a look at part of Jailhouse that is not visited that often, specifically the area of the cave that loops back towards the mainline, going left at the T intersection in the Swiss siphon. Most teams have open circuit gas or time constraints and plan to visit the highly decorated longer section of the Swiss siphon area, so don't bother swimming up this short but very pretty passage. The end of the line of this section of cave is very close to the line where divers enter the Swiss siphon, not much more than a couple of body lengths, and in very obvious sight. As we were planning our dive, we discussed how we would navigate and mark this section. At this level of training, the relationship is much more based on mentorship than autocratic instruction, and it is rewarding to have honest discussions within a psychologically safe environment. The importance of psychological safety is not emphasized enough in diver training. Feeling included, feeling safe to learn and make mistakes, being able to contribute and being able to raise concerns and challenge the dive plan are all elements of this, and all contribute to enhancing safety and enjoyment. This mentorship approach is also related to Tuckman's work on how teams develop. Within higher level cave or technical classes, leadership from the instructor is in the norming and performing phase, with blurring of roles and a benevolent or laissez-faire leadership style. My student initially suggested swimming around the loop, rejoining the line we had already swum over without installing a line, and then continuing to the T, where we would turn right and continue the dive. This seems like a reasonable approach, given that we would have swum that section of passage a few minutes before, and we would have rejoined the route right next to our clearly marked spool. However, it would break one of the primary rules of cave diving, the requirement to have a continuous guideline back to safety at all times. In this instance, the chances of any negative consequences are minuscule, the gap between lines is small, visibility is excellent, and we have an experienced team with a huge amount of diving resources and more than triple the amount of gas needed to get home, even if our rebreathers failed simultaneously. This is exactly the sort of situation that can lead to a deviation from established safe procedures being normalized. Once we accept that breaking a protocol is acceptable, then the possibility of further drift increases. If doing a 3-meter visual jump is okay and has no adverse consequence, then why not do the same thing when the gap between lines is 5 meters or 6 meters or 10 meters, or if the visibility is slightly degraded? We discussed this option and decided to return the long way round. Staying within the rules is not easy when the margins for error appear small or there are other biases involved, such as the sunk cost fallacy. The normalization of deviance isn't about breaking the rules per se, it is more about the social acceptance of the gradual erosion of the standards that have been set. And because we are social creatures, once the erosion has started, it is much harder to recover the situation because you've already got evidence that shows nothing wrong happened when you deviated the last time. Having clear standards within the team makes it easier to call out drift. Having a psychologically safe debrief allows you to identify where gaps between what should have happened and what did happen to be identified and be corrected. Psychological safety isn't about being nice. It is about being honest with each other, even if that is difficult. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to know more about what was discussed in this episode, head over to the Human Diver website at thehumandiver.com, where you will find details about our education programs, the If Only documentary, the book Under Pressure, and the many, many blogs we have published there. If you think others should listen and learn, consider sharing the link. Thank you.